A few months ago, our church secretary, Diana, many of you probably remember her, told me that she needed to relocate to North Carolina because she just could not afford to live in the Bay Area any longer. After more than 20 years, she had to leave, and she was devastated. She had no idea how she would pack up and move from the place that she had called home and the people she had loved and served and called family for two decades. Many tears were shed over that summer as she tried to figure out how she would get through that momentous life change alone. Recently, another friend told me that a routine chest x-ray had revealed a worrisome anomaly on her lung. It didn't look good. It was probably cancer. She was scared. And a few months ago, I spoke with a victim of domestic violence. The abuse had deeply impacted her emotional and mental well-being and her sense of self-worth. Reclaiming her life would be an uphill battle. Three stories of three people facing three different giants. Almost everyone I know is facing some sort of scary giant. And when I say giant, I mean a powerful opponent who comes into our lives and threatens to take over our existence. Giants occupy our minds with worry. They make us feel small and defenseless. They convince us that we are weak and will not survive. Some of these giants are real. They threaten our health, our safety, our mental and emotional stability, and our security. Others are imagined. They prey on our fears. But all of them are dangerous and potentially destructive. The Bible tells an iconic story about one of those giants. You've probably heard of it. A seafaring people from Crete called the Philistines had moved to Palestine. They settled along the coast, along the Mediterranean Sea, and they started to threaten the ancient Israelite people to the east. The Philistines were well-armed and battle-tested, and they soon advanced on the tiny Jewish nation. King Saul was alarmed, and he deployed his troops to confront the enemy. For a long time, the two sides were deadlocked, staring at each other from opposite sides of a ravine in the Elah Valley at the base of the Judean mountains. Then, after a while, from the ranks of the Philistines, a giant, standing almost 7 feet tall, came forward, dressed in armor and wielding a javelin and a spear and a sword. And he challenged the Israelites to a contest between him and one other man. This was known in ancient warfare as single combat, and the outcome would determine which side would win the war. No one in King Saul's ranks dared to move or even breathe. But then, a young shepherd boy from Bethlehem who had brought food to his brothers on the front lines stepped forward. The king said, "No way. You're just a little boy. This is a huge giant." But David insisted. Saul was out of options, so he reluctantly allowed it, and he offered David his armor. David said, "No, thank you," and sprang down the hill toward the giant with nothing but a slingshot in his hands. It was a crazy strategy, right? Who would do that? Or was it? See, Goliath was heavy infantry. He was a foot soldier. And foot soldiers in those days were usually weighed down with armor and swords and shields. And he expected to confront another warrior equally weighed down. But David was free from all of that. He was free from the armor and the weaponry. He was able to run toward Goliath with great speed and maneuver nimbly around his lumbering opponent. Now, lest you think that the outcome of this contest is mere fiction, modern ballistic experts have studied this, and they say that the velocity at which David likely hurled that stone with his slingshot was more than enough to take down a man like Goliath. And so David, the underdog, saved the day. He used his unique ability with a slingshot to outsmart his opponent and take him down. It was the very thing that everyone else overlooked and the giant did not expect. Today we begin a brand new message series called Defeating Giants. It's about how to take on the giants in your life and win. Take a look at this whimsical take on giants.
A dog's life can be a little humdrum. Except every once in a while, duty calls. I'm needed to protect, to guard, and sometimes take down giants.
Underdogs. They win more often than you might imagine. That's because giants are often not what we think they are. What seem to be their strengths, you know, like Goliath's heavy armor and weapons, are often their greatest weaknesses. The problem is that we have become convinced that only giants can be victorious. We have come to believe that physical strength or financial success or social and political power are the only ways to win at life. But throughout this series, we're going to encounter many underdogs and misfits like David, who prevailed in surprising victories over big, scary, ugly giants. And they did it by using unexpected strategies and hidden strengths. And our hope is that in this series, you will come to believe that whatever giant stands in your way right now, or in the way of someone you love, God will give you or them the strength to win. It's going to be a fascinating series. So let's get started with our first story from the Bible. And that first story comes from one of Jesus' parables in the Gospel of Luke. Here's how it begins. Jesus said, "There was a judge in a certain town who neither feared God nor respected any human being." So right there, at the beginning of the story, is our giant. He's a man of importance, a high-ranking official, a prominent member of society. And he's a scoundrel. Now enter the underdog. A widow in that town used to come to him and say, "Render a just decision against me, for me, against my adversary." Someone was oppressing the widow, and she needed help to get justice. Widows in those days needed a man to provide for them. If a woman's husband died and she had no sons to support her, a widow would suffer extreme poverty, often to the point of being forced to beg on the streets or worse. In fact, widows were one of three groups, along with orphans and immigrants, who were considered to be the most vulnerable in society. Now, because the widow is going to the court to get help, we can assume that she was alone and on her own. There were no male relatives to help her. She was clearly the underdog. And she tried an unexpected strategy to get justice. And that strategy was all she had. It was the same strategy used 20 centuries later by a man named Vivek Ranadive in San Jose, California. I love this story. Ranadive decided to coach his middle school daughter's basketball team. The only problem was he was an immigrant from Mumbai who came to America with $50 in his pocket. Later, he rose through the ranks to become an executive in Silicon Valley and a billionaire. But his problem at the moment was that he had never even watched basketball, much less played it. They didn't have basketball in India. And here he is coaching his middle school daughter's basketball team. So he started watching the game and studying it. And what he couldn't understand is why the opposing team would defend only about 24 feet of the entire length of the court. Now, you know I know nothing about sports, but here's the way I understand it. Every time a team scores, they run to the opposite end of the court and wait under the basket there. The other team passes the ball in from the sidelines and dribbles it all the way down the court without anybody trying to block them or do any defense. They're able to get all the way down the court where their opponents are waiting. That left 70 feet of undefended territory, which didn't make sense to Renatove. Why would you leave that so much of the basketball court undefended? The other problem was that he was coaching a team of girls who were the daughters of nerds and computer programmers. They loved books and science and math. What they didn't have was natural athletic ability. And so if they played the conventional way, like the other girls, you know, letting their opponents dribble the ball all the way up the court without opposition, they wouldn't have a chance against larger girls who knew how to pass the ball, shoot layups, and score baskets. They were clearly the underdog. And so what Renatove decided to do was to have his team use an uncommon strategy, one that their rivals would never expect. Rather than try to win on the same terms as the bigger, stronger girls, Renatove trained his players to ferociously defend all 94 feet of the basketball court. As soon as the other team passed the ball inbounds, his girls were all over them with a full court press all the way down every game, every time. Do you know what that took? Incredible aerobic capacity. Instead of spending a lot of time trying to teach his girls the skills of the game, Renatove made his girls run at every practice. He ran them and ran them and ran them to make sure they were in shape so they could run up and down the court constantly without any breaks. What was their winning strategy? They tried harder than anyone else, and they never gave up. They persisted, and they ended up at the national championships. You know, it was the same strategy used by the Israelites when they were attacked in the desert by a ferocious tribe of nomads called the Amalekites. It's a story we heard in the first reading. Moses and his people were hungry and thirsty and tired. They were escaping from the Egyptians. They had just gotten across the Red Sea. They were exhausted. But before they could get water or food, the Amalekites who lived there pounced on them without warning, ambushing them in the barren desert where they had the home court advantage. They were clearly the underdogs. So what did Moses do? He climbs to the top of a nearby hill and he stretches out his hands in prayer to God. And as long as Moses kept his hands raised up, Israel had the better of the fight. But when he let his hands rest, Amalek had the better of the fight. When his hands grew tired, other people held them up through the whole day until sunset. Do you know what that took? It took uncommon strength and perseverance. But they won. And guess what? So did the widow in the parable today. Remember that story? For a long time, the judge did not want to give her justice, but eventually he thought, you know, while it's true that I don't fear God or anybody else or have any respect for anybody else, this widow keeps bothering me. So I'm going to do what she asks me to do. In the end, the poor widow, the underdog, prevailed over the judge. Once again, the underdog won, and the giant was defeated. What was her winning strategy? Once again, persistence. It was the same for Renatove and the misfit Israelites facing the Amalekites. In all three cases, the underdog did not fight the giant on his own terms. That would have been a losing scenario. The Amalekites, they weren't starving, they weren't dehydrated and trying to fight on foreign territory. The girls on the other basketball team, they loved basketball, they played it all the time. The judge had the backing of the social and political elite. No, in all three cases, the underdogs would have lost had they tried to imitate the giants they faced. Instead, they outsmarted them by using the only skill or strength they had that the giant would never expect. Here's the thing. Giants appear in everyone's life from time to time. And some of them are really big and really nasty. They're monsters who want to sit on your chest and pressure you into submission. You may be intimidated. You may want to give up. You may resign yourself to the belief that the giant will always win in the end. But it's a lie. It's a lie. It's not consistent with Christian hope or even with historical evidence. And so whether you feel like you're drowning in grief over someone you've lost, or you're troubled by a bully at work or school, or you're worried about a gigantic project that's looming over your head and just seems overwhelming, or you feel lost because your kids are all grown up and they don't visit very much and you don't know what you're going to do next, or you just got a terrible diagnosis, or you just can't shake the feeling of loneliness or depression, or you can't let go of some kind of trauma from the past. Whatever the giant is that you are facing, the underdogs in this week's message give us one important key to defeating all those giants. Persistence. Trying harder than the giant and trusting in God to give you the victory by playing the long game. That may not sound very comforting, but remember the words of Jesus today. Will not God then secure the rights of his chosen ones who call out to him day and night? No, I tell you, he will give them justice and he will give them justice speedily. Renatove and his girls, the widow in the parable, and the Israelites in their fight against the Amalekite bullies, they all won over their giants through perseverance, and so can you. Next week, we're going to encounter a different underdog who won with a different strategy that the overly confident giant in that story never expected. Join us for episode 2 of Defeating Giants next week. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot. Here's a text I got from Diana. Here's what she said. I'm very proud of myself, Father. I moved clear across the United States to an unknown state with no job. I gave away most of my belongings and lots of wonderful memories. I'm now near family, building new relationships, and helping to bring Jesus to others. She's got a new apartment that she loves and a new job at the Biltmore Estates in Asheville, North Carolina. She just started last week and she's busy helping them get ready for a magical Christmas at the Biltmore Estates. That ugly giant of fear and helplessness could not keep Diana down. And the woman with a spot on her lung, she faced down that giant too, through persistent prayer, and it turned out to be nothing. And the survivor of domestic violence, well, she got through it. And now she's helping other women face that awful giant. One after the other, the giants who threaten us cannot stand when we trust in God.